Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
I think we actually may be hitting a point now where more and more founders are asking, how will this work for the farmer themselves? What does this actually do in the field? Is it something that is easy to adopt that will, you know, be worth the money immediately, you know, that has ROI? Those are questions that are a lot more common these days. And I think that is, it's really positive to see that and really encouraging.
Welcome to Ag Bioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. I'm Kayla Chittister, producer of the podcast and this week's host of the show. From biologicals to food as health, what trends took over Ag Bioscience in 2025 and where are we headed in 2026? Perhaps no one better than to go straight to the source. Global Ag Tech editor Jen Marston for Ag Funder News joins us this week to talk about the current state of venture capital, the down market we're in, and the good news of where we are headed in the future. Please join this conversation with Jen Marston this week on Ag Bioscience. Jen, welcome to Ag Bioscience.
Hi. It's good to be here.
It's been a couple years.
It has, yes. And I miss you all up in Indiana. I need to get back out there and see you.
Well, you know you're welcome here anytime. We got a lot to get to, and we're going to talk about venture, which has been a topic, as you know. And AgFunder comes out with a report about mid-year. And so I think it's important for us to get kind of into the high level. Share your perspective of what you've seen over the past year in venture across the board.
Absolutely. So, you know, we started out the year with, if we're looking at kind of what was raised in 2024 in agri-food tech venture, it was $16 billion, which, to put that in context, is about half of what was raised in 2022, which that figure is half of what was raised in the previous year, 2021. So we started the year going, okay, how much further is VC funding to agri-food tech going to decline? And so if we look at the numbers for the first half of 2025, startups have raised about $5.1 billion. That is again down. It's down about 37% from H1 2024. And even greater news, not really, is that that is the lowest mid-year level since 2015. So that's a bit of a sobering reality check, I think we got around the end of June in July about what the state of venture is. The latest numbers, which I wrote a post on not long ago, were for Q3 2025, and we saw another drop about 32% from year over year from Q3 2024. So that's kind of the high level. It's not the most amazing news in the world. However, I would say the big thing here is, you know, it's 2025. We can't have a conversation without mentioning AI. And AI is currently, let's say it's eating everybody's lunch. And that's not just agri-food tech. That's pretty much most other sectors are feeling the hit in venture because the bulk of venture right now is going towards AI startups. So, you know, how that pans out going into next year, it's a little, we'll get into that. But, you know, I think one thing that I hear a lot of people emphasize nowadays, and I also think is really important, is that, yes, the numbers are down. However, pretty much every founder, startup founder, and, you know, industry players who have been there for a long time, for many years, they all say the funding is still there. It's a matter of, is the startup, is your business model, you know, something that's going to be a good fit for venture? Have you been paying attention to unit economics, to profitability, to, is it actually a technology and a solution that will solve a real problem in ag tech, in biotech? So all that to say, you know, we're still seeing money come in. And hopefully we can get into this, but hopefully we're kind of actually at the bottom of this funding drop.
When you peel the curtain back on this down market, and I know you've mentioned AI, what categories are winning right now? Maybe both categorically, of course, Jen, but then also geographically, are there areas globally that are winning?
Well, you know, the U.S. is definitely still leading the venture capital for agri-food tech. And that's been the case for, you know, the last decade, I think. But we are seeing some interesting, we are seeing the numbers go up in India, which has a really good mix of, there's a lot of precision ag solutions. Ag marketplaces are really big in India and also just in emerging markets in general, because a lot of these smallholder farmers in those places kind of lack that traditional access, or lack the access to traditional credit that we see a little bit more of here. I think one really, really interesting idea, and we saw two raises in Q3, is this virtual fencing. And so this is essentially collars for cattle and for herds. I think it one of the companies uses it on sheep as well, I think. But essentially, these collars can track herd movement, and a rancher can manage it remotely, see where the herd is, monitor things like health, and all of this without having to install an actual fence, because if a cow starts to veer towards the boundary, it gets, and I have extensively looked into this, it does not hurt the animal. You know, it gets a little vibration, if you will, if it starts to go out of the boundary. So there were two raises for that. We had Halter, which is a New Zealand company. They raised $100 million back in June. And then here in the US, we had NoFence, which raised $35 million. So that, you know, that's a really great example of a fairly simple technology that is solving a very straightforward problem. I know, you know, we had also Inari, which is a kind of a seed development company. They had a big raise this year, $144 million. So that's exciting in the ag biotech space. We are seeing a lot of raises now for robotics and automation and different solutions addressing weeding, addressing packaging, those sorts of things. And then I would say, going back to the AI question, there are use cases for AI in certain areas of ag tech that could be really interesting. They haven't necessarily raised a ton of funding yet, but if you think about AI as a way to help product discovery in biologicals, you know, which have a very, very long timeline for development, I have been told by multiple people working in that industry that this could significantly speed up the discovery process for some of those solutions.
As the market has continued to shift, even here over the last 18 to 24 months, Jen, in conversations you've had and in the writing you've done with both VCs and startups, these shifts you've seen over the last 18 to 24 months, how would you summarize those?
I would say we have gone, well, someone put it really well recently in an interview when they told me we're skimming along the bottom. We've gone from those highs of 2021, 2022, down to everyone freaking out a little bit and getting concerned about the drop in funding. The tourist investors, those that were coming in those earlier years and writing these massive checks and inflating valuations, they're more or less gone from the sector, at least for now. So what we're in at the moment is really a retrenching. We're seeing startups and investors kind of step back, move a little slower. I think there are a lot more people being very tactical in their thinking, very targeted. There's more focus on how do I build or invest in something that's actually useful, something that, you know, may not necessarily bring the high returns that were promised, you know, back in 2021, but will nonetheless provide positive unit economics, reach profitability. You know, we really have gone from this growth at all costs mentality to this sort of quiet retrenching and setting ourselves up for the next kind of wave of ag tech. I think we've also seen external from the ag tech sector, we've seen a lot of challenges come into play all over the world. We have some geopolitical situations that are certainly impacting, you know, over the last few years, input prices, supply chain, et cetera. In the US here, of course, we have some changes with the new administration. We have the tariffs. We have a lot of questions around immigration, which is obviously connected to labor. And then, of course, as I said earlier, everyone is contending with just the sheer presence of AI and how much space in people's minds and also in people's pocketbooks that is actually taking up right now.
You mentioned earlier, there is still funding there, and even talked about some of the stories that you are writing, because Ag Funder News is in the business of telling these stories. And so from your perspective, the people who are securing this funding, who are out there still making these, you know, fundraises and securing these wins, what are they doing differently?
Well, they're keeping it simple, for one thing. 5 years ago, it was extremely common to talk to a startup or a founder, entrepreneur, and hear them talk about, we'll revolutionize the food system, we'll save, you know, farming, we'll this, these big words and these big promises. I do not hear that anymore. I hear people talking about how do we improve our unit economics? How do we build the best relationships with the customers that we have? You know, we've seen, I think, just that, as I said before, there's definitely a much more narrowed focus on things. And we see folks expanding a lot slower than maybe they would have done in the past, as well as I think we actually may be hitting a point now where more and more founders are asking, how will this work for the farmer themselves? What does this actually do in the field? Is it something that is easy to adopt that will, you know, be worth the money immediately, you know, that has ROI? Those are questions that are a lot more common these days. And I think that it's really positive to see that and really encouraging.
All of those points, you know, developing innovation for the farmer, slower scalability, all of those things sort of point to where we're headed, which is, you know, how does this position itself to be a success here in regions like Indiana and in the Midwest? And those are things we're going to get to here after the break. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. We're talking with Jennifer Marston, Global Ag Tech Editor for Ag Funder News. Jen, the phrase patient capital gets thrown around a lot in ag bioscience and with longer sales cycle, regulatory pressures, things like that. I think the question has to be asked, are we due to maybe talk about a reset in the way startups get funded in our industry?
The $1 million question. Yeah, I've been asking folks their opinion on that question for a few years now. The short answer is yes. How that happens is a little bit more nuanced, and different people definitely think different things. But, you know, I don't think it's that venture capital is wrong for ag tech, even though, yes, we have venture capital. It moves quickly. It is, by its very nature, the opposite of patient. And that is how it has pretty much always been. Agriculture is nature. Nature moves by its own rules, and those rules are not fast. So there is that conflict there. I think to say it's completely a mismatch is a little bit of a dismissal. I think skepticism is good, especially now. But I would say that it's a bit of a challenge to figure out, well, you know, how does it fit into this mix? I think corporate venture capital could be a really interesting avenue going forward. We're not seeing a ton of that at the moment yet. We're seeing more just partnerships. But that is a big discussion right now is, you know, what are corporates doing to sort of enable these startups to equip them to be able to really develop these innovations? So I think what we can probably expect to see in the near term would be more M&A of these companies, more roll-ups, definitely a lot more debt finance. We've seen that go up quite a bit over the last couple of years. And then, you know, I think as far as patient capital goes, again, venture capital isn't patient by its nature. So I think, you know, what we may start to see is public funding going towards these companies as they do proof of concept. And in those really early days when they're still trying to kind of suss everything out, the private capital, the venture capital is, you know, perhaps something that becomes then a little bit more appropriate for slightly more established startups.
We've begun to see some unique models sort of unfold here in Indiana, right, with Corteva Catalyst. And I think the ability to be so agile with what is an investment, what's a partnership, what's a collaboration, and then the launch of Elanco's One Health Innovation District, a place-based space for innovators to come, you know, innovate at the intersection of human, plant, animal, and environmental health. There are new and interesting ways to get in on the ground floor, even if it's not maybe necessarily direct investment. You begin to see some emergence of new ideas kind of coming about. You've always had sort of a fascination with these pockets throughout the United States that aren't the coasts. And I'm curious, with your fascination and things like this emerging, is this an opportunity right now for these pockets to begin building an innovation ecosystem, even further than what they already have?
I think it definitely could be a big opportunity. And yes, you're right. I love seeing these little pockets of innovation in the middle of the country. I think they get overlooked a lot of times because so much of the venture capital hubs, they're still on the coasts. And that is one challenge to getting more funding going into these places in the middle of the country, is they're physically separated from where kind of the main hives, if you will, or the hubs for that would be. However, you know, we see, yes, everything you all are doing in Indianapolis, I would say another place that really has a strong community and has the universities has, well, St. Louis, it has, you know, Bayer, it's got the Danforth Center. There's a really strong innovation community happening in both ag tech and biosciences over there. I think another one that I have, you know, it doesn't so much have a strong venture, although there are some firms there, is the kind of Fargo, North Dakota, Minneapolis part of the country. There's a lot of energy there. There's a lot of startups. And so there's also a lot of partnerships between universities, and, which is also something you all have as well, is, you know, these partnerships with universities. And that would be interesting also to see in terms of helping startups really develop ideas, what role those universities can play, particularly as we all talk about breaking down that divide between academia and the startup world. So I think there's definitely an opportunity. One thing that would substantially help would be, again, stronger partnerships between startups and corporates. And so it'll be interesting to watch where big food and ag companies are locating themselves and what sort of startup communities might develop around that.
You mentioned these partnerships between universities and startups. And I know one here in Indianapolis that I think maybe you guys recently had a chance to cover was BioMedit, the announcement of their grant with Yale University and the Bezos Earth Fund to work on methane emission reduction. I know you've had a chance to spend time, I think, with Kyle Moeller as well. In Signum AgTech, there's a lot of innovation emerging. I'm very curious, what has you really excited right now, Jen?
You know, we have seen an uptick in different innovations around livestock, whether that's health or management, like the virtual fencing tech I was talking about earlier. And I think that's really exciting because it's coming at a time when we've got the avian influenza is a very serious problem. We have record high, you know, beef prices, at least here in the United States, that really has people concerned and is obviously, you know, a lot of different solutions there being discussed. We also have questions and people working towards how do we make meat and livestock a little bit more climate friendly? How do we manage all that in a way that uses fewer resources? It's really exciting to see what folks are doing in those areas. I think it's unrealistic to say we're going to, and I don't think at this point anyone would disagree with me, that we're going to magically not have animal-based protein. I mean, if anything, demand for that is going up. So it is really exciting to see companies working on how do we meet that demand in the best possible way for communities, for the planet, for consumers' pocketbooks, et cetera, et cetera. Another area, it's, you know, it is ag related in the sense of how are we growing our crops, which is this whole idea of food as medicine, this idea of using food to treat chronic diseases, which are a huge, huge, huge problem, not just in the US, in many parts of the world. Food prescriptions, working with healthcare companies that are offering patients these food prescriptions, a lot of things being done for, you know, veterans. I think the Rockefeller Foundation has some pretty interesting work around that. But also, what is the technology that could help individuals track their health and keep a better grip on what am I buying at the store? How is it fitting into this overall idea of using food as a way to combat chronic disease? A lot of interesting things happening in ag robotics. That is, right now, it's really weed management is the big one there. And there have been just a ton of companies using different methods to try and control the weed problem, which, you know, as well as I, is like the bane of every farmer's existence. The harvesting robots is something that I'm interested to see evolve because it does not have the traction that some of the other areas of ag robotics do right now. I think one of the reasons for that is harvesting is such a specific task for each and every different crop. So technically speaking, to engineer something that's going to be able to accommodate harvesting, you know, carrots at the same time we're talking about harvesting strawberries, those are very different needs there, technically speaking. So we don't yet really have the kind of technology where somebody could, where it's one machine that can do several different jobs, which therefore makes it a lot more expensive and niche. And, you know, there are a lot of folks working on that. I think that will definitely be an area that we may see a little bit more development in over the next year, which I think is exciting.
When you look at what you are currently writing about, what story do you want people to know about?
It's such a hard question because there's so many I want people
they are like children. I get it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I want, and you'll see more of this coming out from Ag Funder News in, you know, going into 2026, is I want people to know about what is working, what are the success stories. As I said towards the beginning of our talk, we all know that the funding is down and we know that we're skimming along the bottom and we know the tourist investors have left. This is not new information. And if anybody is thinking like myself, it's getting a bit tiresome to continually discuss that. So as we think about going into the next phase of ag tech, I think it's really important to talk about what is working and to speak with the people who have managed to overcome odds or have put forth a really interesting solution for some of these problems. So that I would say is definitely probably going to be my North Star for the next year in terms of what I'm covering and looking at. You know, a lot of people say, if we're going, is this hot or not topic wise, that carbon markets are not really that interesting anymore. I think there's a lot of excitement there, especially as we are starting to see big companies, big food companies and agribusiness companies move away from this idea of, well, I'm just going to offset all of my emissions by buying carbon credits to, I'm going to look in my own supply chain and how can I reduce emissions there? A lot more questions than answers right now in terms of that market, but I think we're going to see some exciting discussions around that come up and probably some, a lot more accusations of greenwashing, a lot more debates. But, you know, I think if you're not debating the merits of something, then there's a problem. So there's a lot of healthy dialogue still around carbon. I think the other piece is, how are we going to see AI fit into some of these different areas of ag tech? The reason I think this is important is because it's really easy to make a claim, and I get these in press releases all the time, we have an AI-driven platform, or it's AI-powered. What does that actually mean in the context of ag biotech or ag tech in the field? And I gave you an example earlier of, you know, AI is being used at this point to help speed up the discovery process of, say, microbes or something like that. It'll be very intriguing to see how that continues to make its way, or to put it a different way, it'll be intriguing to see where it becomes most useful. And I think one of the things, speaking from the media perspective, is how do we explain that when talking about a company? Because it's as much as an investor needs to do due diligence and understand, okay, they say they're AI powered, but what does that actually mean? What's actually happening under the hood? You know, that's on someone like me as well, to, when talking about it in an article, to really examine that and look at it and go, what does it actually mean when you say there's AI in this? So that, to be honest, sounds a little bit daunting, but an exciting kind of journalistic challenge to take on in the next year. So I would say that that's another one.
There's a lot of perspective to come, and we always know we're going to find it with you, Jen, on agfundernews.com. She is Global Ag Tech Editor Jen Marston. Thank you so much for joining us on Ag Bioscience.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for tuning in. If you have not subscribed on YouTube, please do so. On behalf of the entire Agrinovis team, I'm Kayla Chittister saying thank you for watching and listening. We'll see you back next week on the podcast.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, brought to you by Indiana Farm Bureau. Produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez. Photography and design by Kaylee Verstey. Video by Darren Cooper and 1898 Creative. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, listen, and review. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience online at agrinovisindiana.com.